Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. County officials initiate search for new surveillance equipment, deputy, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. At yesterday's regular meeting, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court approved the first steps toward a new mobile surveillance unit and a deputy for the Sheriff's Office. With the Commissioner's blessing, the PCSO will be able to move forward with both projects, which the department hopes will have a positive impact across the county. First, the commissioners voted in favor of initiating an RFP, request for proposals, to replace an ailing mobile surveillance unit mounted on the back of a PCSO vehicle for use on patrol. The software on the old mobile unit was outdated, and the only place to take it for necessary repairs was in Florida. Rather than have a staff member drive across the country, the PSCO opted to replace it instead. We thought the best thing to do was to dispose of it through the Operation Stone Garden grant program, PSCO Secretary Elmore explained. The Operation Stone Garden program, a federal network of grants offered to border governments to help offset the cost of law enforcement equipment and staffing, originally funded the unit. The new up-to-date model is already an approved purchase through the department's Operation Lone Star funds, the state-level wave of funding for law enforcement on the border. This one is a lot more high-tech, Elmore said. The upgraded equipment boasts a number of features intended to help the PSCO in the county's most remote reaches. The mobile unit can be charged indefinitely off of a vehicle's battery and has a number of imaging options, high-quality daytime photo and video recording, and a sophisticated thermal camera that can sense a person up to 6 miles away. The unit is also equipped with GPS trackers and a number of laser scopes to help officers determine exact distances and waypoints. The unit can ride compactly in the back of a vehicle, or it can be extended. The largest available unit can stretch up to 34 feet high. To help guide the purchasing and implementation process, the commissioners appointed a committee of Elmore, Precinct 2 Commissioner Margarito Hernandez and Treasurer Francis Garcia to offer their expertise. The total price tag is $663,000 for the unit. The county will be using an existing vehicle. Next, PSCO Chief Deputy Joel Nunez gave a brief presentation in support of the department's plan to hire a third deputy to cover the northern half of the county. The plan had been in the works since 2015, when the department added a third deputy to cover Presidio. They'd talked about adding another one for Marfa, but that plan fell by the wayside after the Marfa Police Department, scrapped in 2009 and temporarily replaced by a contract with the PSCO, rebooted in 2017. Nunez explained that the three Presidio deputies were sometimes called to assist in Customs and Border Protection, CBP, operations. The new Marfa deputy would be more focused on strictly domestic concerns. "We have a lot of activity on the border. It's increasing," Nunez said. "We want someone to cover more of the normal duties of a deputy. Citizen complaints, highway patrol, community presence." The commissioner's court ultimately voted in favor of hiring another deputy. For the rest of the fiscal year, the new hire will be bankrolled by seized funds and then will become a permanent part of the county budget during the next cycle. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. FBI establishes permanent presence in the Big Bend region with new Alpine office. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. This Tuesday, the Federal Bureau of Investigation El Paso Field Office held a ribbon-cutting ceremony to commemorate the grand opening of its new Alpine branch, a brand-new facility located just off of U.S. 90 on the west side of town that currently employs two special agents. "We're very proud to be here and have this building in Alpine," said Jeffrey Downey, special agent in charge of the El Paso Field Office, following the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance and a prayer led by the FBI Alpine Branch's chaplain. "You don't see a space like this everywhere. I think it's a demonstration of the commitment to this community that we have a standalone building, a very nice building, with FBI markings on the outside." In an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel following opening remarks and the ribbon cutting, Downey offered further insight into why the agency wanted to have a permanent physical presence in the remote town of Alpine, a place he referred to as a high-risk area within FBI El Paso's jurisdiction due to its proximity to the Texas-Mexico border. "Based on the threat picture in the area of various criminal matters that are going on, corruption, national security concerns at the border, the FBI decided we need to invest more resources down here," said Downey. "Ultimately, we ended up building the building as a result of that." The El Paso Field Office includes two resident agencies, one in Midland and now another in Alpine, which will serve Brewster, Jeff Davis, Presidio, and Pecos counties. The two special agents who are stationed in Alpine were present for the opening event, but were purposefully not identified, said Downey. "The Alpine agents will focus on the breadth of federal crimes," said Downey, "including national security, cybercrime, of which the area was a target," he said, "drug trafficking, crimes against children, and more. There is a great deal of work to be done in these four different counties here," said Downey. A focus of the event was continued collaboration with local law enforcement, many of which were present for the ceremony, which saw around 40 attendees, including Border Patrol, Drug Enforcement Administration, Brewster County Sheriff, and Alpine Police Department officers. "It's something that needs to be stressed, our collaborative work going forward," said Special Agent Greg Cipriano, supervisor of the Midland and Alpine resident agencies, addressing the gathered crowd. "I look forward to the partnerships out here, working with you all on your mission and working with you to support our mission here." Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson, who attended the opening ceremony, said he was aware of the ongoing effort to establish a permanent FBI presence in the area and spoke to the prior benefits of having FBI agents on the ground. "They moved some agents here, and it was easy. We could visit with them, and they could come get in our cars and see what we were looking at," said Dodson. The sheriff's office would continue to work with the FBI on crimes that are brought to their attention that are under federal authority, and for local cases when lab diagnostics are required, for example, said Dodson. "It's nice having the agents here. We know them. We like them. They're very friendly. They come and visit. They don't just hide behind these locked doors. They're out, and they actually come into our offices and ask for help from us, too," said Dodson. While declining to share the new facility's specific features, Downey said the building was equipped with capabilities that would be made available to other local law enforcement. "There's a lot of agencies down here in a remote area. It's built for an area that we can all come and utilize it," said Downey. Downey said the need for an Alpine office has grown over the years. FBI agents used to commute 2.5 hours to Alpine from the Midland office to work on criminal and national security cases, even after a full-time agent was assigned to the area back in 2014. In 2017, an FBI agent was stationed full-time at a local Border Patrol station. In 2016, Congress allocated $600,000 to the FBI for the new Alpine building, but there wasn't adequate General Services Administration space, according to Downey, so the agency opted to build a new facility from scratch. Construction began in 2021 and wrapped up in June 2022. Downey said that despite supply chain and other delays during the building's construction, agents continued to work on cases involving drug trafficking, child pornography, public corruption, and the Big Bend National Park child endangerment case. While there are no expansions planned at this time, said Downey, the new FBI facility in Alpine was built to grow and could hold up to 8 employees. We're always re-evaluating where our agents are and where the need is. This building specifically was designed for expansion and for growth, so we have the ability to add more agents and more staff to this office as we deem necessary, said Downey. He added that while the high security outfit was not promoting an open door policy per se, community members would be able to file reports and talk to the local agents at the new facility, and the FBI would continue to have a presence in the community and with other local law enforcement. Event attendees were invited on a tour of the new facility Tuesday. This is forever, said Downey. We're not going anywhere. Alpine Mayor Catherine Eves attended the event and assisted both Downey and Cipriano with the ceremonial ribbon cutting, and said she was supportive of the FBI's presence in the Alpine community. It shows the tremendous commitment that the FBI has for the community. We're very grateful to have them here, said Eves. Especially being close to the border, it's important to have our law enforcement. The city supports law enforcement in every way possible. In remote Presidio County, attempt to block road access yields a complex legal fight, by Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. On Tuesday morning, 394th District Court Judge Jennifer Wright presided over a hearing on access to a road snaking through remote rural Presidio County. Ayers Road, also known as County Road 27, begins at the Hot Springs Road and ultimately runs into vast tracts of private land belonging to warring legal parties. A total of 6 lawyers were present to grapple with the question, who gets access to the stretch of Ayers Road that passes through 80 acres belonging to defendants Mary Baxter and Neil Chavigny? The couple is being sued by Maria Marial, an Austin-based land investor, who last year swiped up 480 acres near their remote property. Her only means of accessing a home on her impressive acreage, she says, runs through that of Baxter and Chavigny, who have barred her entry with a locked gate. It is an unprecedented gesture in the road's roughly century-long history, claim her lawyers, who have now vociferously argued across multiple public venues that the road is a county road open for public use. That's a claim that has yet to be proven, the opposing legal team counters. There's no official county record that they have submitted that show the road in question is indeed a public dedicated road, said Sam Ballard, one of 4 attorneys representing the defendants, at a February hearing on the matter. The nature of Marial's foray into the remote territory has been called into question throughout legal proceedings. The defendants worry she plans to rent it out to vacationers rather than occupy it herself. Their concern is bolstered by a since-removed apparent advertisement for the property on the website of her company, Emacity Land Investments, under a section labeled Ranches for Rent. Marielle's website described the ranch as a peaceful, secluded getaway embraced by the arms of the earth. Screenshots of this section of the site remain documented in court filings. The stress and tensions of a hectic culture soften away as you kick back and let go, soaking up the clean, quiet atmosphere and panoramic mountain views. The site description read, "The only sound comes from nature, the mockingbird, dove, and an occasional coyote." Marielle was joined roughly a month after filing the initial lawsuit by co-plaintiffs Pinto Canyon Ranch, LLC, and Fourth Ranches, LP, both headed by John Fort IV, whose ranch land is reached by following the road past Marielle's property. Fort's father, John Fort III, has been the family member involved in legal proceedings. Fort has, by his own admission, never been denied passage through the Baxter Chavigny estate. He has simply come to fear he and his family might be one day, after negotiations over a prospective easement fell apart, per his own sworn deposition, and believes he should have guarantee of access independent of his neighbor's permission. In the most recently filed amended petition, the fourth since the convoluted legal battle began in November of last year, Marielle and Fort's attorneys assert an argument that hinges on history. They argue that the road has historically been a county road and was maintained as such until Baxter bought the 80 acres in 2011. The locking of the gate that marks the entry into the Baxter Chavigny property is unprecedented and unlawful, they claim, entitling their clients to relief both monetary, at least $250,000, and non-monetary. Previous occupants of land along the road, including the Vizcaino and Judd families, who owned Fort's ranch land before him, and the Daltons, which owned Marielle's property before her, have long enjoyed uninhibited access, posing their clients for either prescriptive easements or easements by estoppel, they argue. Baxter and Chavigny's attorneys have argued in court that it is unproven that Ayers Road is a public, county-maintained road, but even if it is, that designation would stop at the entry to Baxter and Chavigny's private property. The attempted easement claims are moot, they say, because the plaintiffs can't show unity of ownership or evidence they once owned the tract of land they're seeking to pass through. The trouble started in July 2022, shortly after Marielle bought the property at 316 Ayers Road from William Dalton. Up until this point, per court records, Baxter had locked the gate leading to her property, but willingly shared the lock's combination with her neighbors, including Fort. Emails between John Jeff Fort III and Baxter, exhibits in the case file, show when this openness shifted with the arrival of Marielle. "Because I'm not looking forward to a bunch of VRBOers, via our new neighbor, coming through my place, I will be changing the lock combination this week," wrote Baxter in an email dated July 31, 2022. The Judd Foundation, which owns land accessed by the road, was also aware of the change, she wrote, as was Border Patrol. "Thank you in advance for not sharing the combination with any undesirables, including shifty politicians or real estate agents." Indeed, days earlier, a lawyer for Baxter and Chavigny had sent Marielle a letter stating that her entry on their property without permission was unauthorized and considered a trespass, and that a new lock was being placed on the gate to prevent her entry. Shortly thereafter, on August 8th, Marielle emailed then-Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara, requesting that she assist in the matter, records show. In a sworn deposition, Marielle testified that she believed upon purchase she would have access to her property due to conversations with the previous owner and neighbors, who, she says, informed her of an agreement for all the neighborhood to have access. A handful of those neighbors have submitted affidavits testifying that the road has historically been open for use. When asked in her deposition whether she intended to rent out the ranch, identified on her website as Split Rock Ranch, Marielle responded that she didn't know and clarified that her website is under construction. When asked why she includes nearby attractions, including the City of Marfa and the Prada Marfa installation, on the listing, she responded, "Because I am a West Texas lover, and I want people to know what is in there. I'm a true believer that nature can heal your soul," she continued. The website for Emacity, Marielle's LLC, advertises 10-plus acre tracts of land in Presidio County for sale, which Marielle testified was unrelated to Split Rock Ranch. Emacity exists to help buyers create the dream of land ownership, per the website, wherein Marielle introduces herself as a land investor passionate about West Texas. In the course of her deposition, Marielle also spoke to the hardships of being denied access to the land she owns. Her house on the land had incurred damage from a storm during the time she was unable to access it, she said. In November, shortly after the lawsuit was filed, the court issued a temporary restraining order prohibiting Baxter or Chavigny from restricting Marielle's access to the road. At a court hearing in early February, Marielle was granted a temporary injunction allowing her access to the property with certain restrictions. Judge Wright ordered the two parties to go into mediation in an attempt to settle the matter within 90 days to avoid a trial. At Tuesday's court hearing, it was revealed that a resolution could not be reached despite undergoing three rounds of mediation. Rod Pontone, one of Marielle and Fort's two attorneys, the other being Joseph Hood, called for a jury trial. The date of that trial has yet to be determined. In the meantime, Judge Wright ruled to end Marielle's temporary injunction, barring her access to the road for the time being. "The road that traverses the Baxter property is not a public county road," Wright concluded. "That's a private road that belongs to Mary Baxter, and because it's Mary Baxter's private road, she can certainly block it off, refuse people entry. She can bulldoze it up if she wants to. It's hers," said Judge Wright, but not without acknowledging the hardship placed on the plaintiff. "Miss Marielle, this is terrible. I feel awful for you, just awful. But I'm going to follow the law, and this is how I see it," said the judge. "All the reading I have done does show that you can indeed landlock somebody in Texas. And I'm sorry, but that's where we are today." Seemingly resigned to await the outcome of a jury trial, the matter unexpectedly reared its head again the following morning at Wednesday's regular Presidio County Commissioner's Court meeting. Attorney Joseph Hood, accompanied by his clients, appeared before the court to ask that officials acknowledge a historical fact that the road in question has been a county road and remains a county road to this day, and that they unlock or remove the gate currently blocking the road. Both Jeff Fort himself and longtime local Sean Prieto testified to the road's historical usage as an uninhibited county road. Ballard, also attending the meeting via Zoom, noted there was no designated agenda item on the road in question and that Judge Wright had ruled in his client's favor just the day before. County officials, for their part, sympathized with the plaintiffs, but maintained it was not currently their place to take any action on the matter. "This was a legal case currently being battled out in the district court," noted County Commissioner David Beebe. "I'm concerned if this case is in the district court and we do anything today, we might be interfering in something that's not our business," said Beebe. "I don't like gates at crossroads personally, but this is not something I'm sure we have jurisdiction over," he went on to say. Presidio County Judge Joe Portillo agreed, and the item was abandoned, but not before the judge briefly reflected on his childhood traversing the very road in question. "I don't remember gates, I don't remember locks," said Portillo. "This is not settled. I don't think we should act on it. I just think it's a shame."
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 23, 2023. Pacheco found not guilty of murder, by Nathan Hewer. An 83rd District Court jury acquitted Andrew Pacheco, 19, last week of murder in a fatal shooting of Edward Ramirez on September 4, 2021 in Fort Stockton. Pacheco was originally indicted for the murder charge in December 2021 before being found not guilty last week. Attorney Christian Valadez, who was second chair to attorney Stephen Spurgeon as part of Pacheco's defense team, explained that the state had numerous burdens they were unable to prove in their attempt to convict Pacheco. "There were three defenses that we used during the trial. It was self-defense, defense of others, and defense of property. At the end of the day, the state had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did knowingly and intentionally commit murder, and they also had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not act in either self-defense, defense of others, or defense of property." The jury said the state didn't meet the burdens. A ruling is pending for an additional charge against Pacheco stemming from the same time period as Ramirez's death. Pacheco was indicted with burglary with intent other felony on the same date he was indicted for murder. According to court documents, the indictment states that on or about the date of September 4, 2021, Pacheco entered the habitation of Roberto Munoz without his effective consent and attempted to commit or committed an assault against Munoz by striking him with fists and feet. The bond amount set for the charge was $25,000. Andrew Pacheco's father, Joe David, received a plea deal in August 2022 after pleading guilty to tampering fabricated physical evidence with intent to impair following the death of Edward Ramirez at his residence. The agreement includes a four-year deferred adjudication community supervision and a one-time fine of $1,330, as well as a $30 monthly community supervision fee after pleading guilty. In January 2022, an engage in organized criminal activity charge against Joe David Pacheco was dismissed in the interest of justice. City delays Lancium Sewer Line Project, by Sean Ward. Due to delays caused by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the timeline for the construction of the 1,800 feet of sewer line that will be placed along U.S. 285 and extend to Lancium's proposed 300-megawatt site has been pushed back. The city received an invoice in the amount of $71,700 on February 20th, despite the project setback. As per their agreement, we're only supposed to be invoiced every 600 feet that was completed, said Economic Director Remy Ramos. That would have been three draws because it's an 1,800-foot line, but they have not even started. As of March 20th, there has been no construction started. Ramos said that due to the delay and possible future delays at the Lancium site, Ramos asked to delay the project and pay for engineering and easements that have already been drawn by Texas Pecos Energy Services. Transpecos has already purchased materials in advance and are charging the city $13,700 restocking fee and has $40,000 worth of materials that can't be returned. I asked for an inventory list of that so we could possibly pay for that and hold it for future. I'd rather pay for some material and hold it in the city yard than pay $13,000 in restocking fee and have nothing to show for it. The city agreed to pay for services performed minus the restocking fee for a total of $58,000. Brian C. with Transpacus Energy said that as soon as they heard that ERCOT was delaying, they called their vendor and got a materials list and was told prices were rising. So we had the signed contracts and we went ahead and bought the materials. We could have kept it all and put it on the invoice. We did what was best for everybody and what we thought was try to return what we could, because at the time we don't know if the project is going to go on or not. Transpacus returned materials that were non-refundable, but still has manhole covers, gaskets, and lids. They charge us a 15% restocking fee on what we returned, he said. We were just looking for the lesser of two evils. Council member Darren Hodges asked if any work was going to be done by Lancium at the site. Because of the delays at Lancium and the unknown right now, that's what I'm considering, just pausing the project, Ramos said. But we do have, so far, the engineering done. All the engineering drawings have been delivered, as well as all the surveys have been delivered. If Lancium's going to hold off, if they're going to happen, do we build a line to nowhere right now? Ramos noted all easements have been secured and landowners notified. We're just waiting for Stripes, he said. Stripes is the last landowner, and we mailed that to their corporate office. We have had verbal conversation with them. We just have not received the actual signed document. Lancium is making some changes and is waiting for ERCOT permits. They built the 300-megawatt substation, which is right at $25 million in investment, but ERCOT has not received the 300 megawatts of power. Lancium is operating a 25-megawatt site at full capacity, but will not build the 300-watt site until ERCOT releases the power. Hodges asked if Lancium was going to follow through with the project. I don't have a crystal ball, Ramos said. I think because they are diversified out of Bitcoin, if they have the power, I believe they do make it. I think the delays in ERCOT and then listening to what we do and listening to the feedback we're getting from Austin, they're trying to find their own self. ERCOT hasn't permitted anything as of current. City Cleanup Now Through April the 2nd by Sean Yorks. Fort Stockton is in the mood for a little spring cleaning, and through April 2nd, residents who present a current city utility bill and a valid ID can dispose of up to two loads of bulky items at the city landfill. In addition, pickup will be available for the spring cleanup event for residents. Residential customers are asked to call City Hall to schedule a pickup of allowed materials. I spoke to the Public Works Director. We do have adequate equipment to complete the project inside the city. Historically, the spring cleanup has allowed residential, no construction, no demo, and no commercial. That's one of the things that we'll be making sure doesn't happen, because right now there's a lot of people who are redoing their roofs and a lot of remodeling. So we wanted to make sure that this is not what this is for. The following bulk items will be accepted: tree limbs, wood, scrap metal, furniture, appliances, and tires. Items must be separated before arrival and place them at the appropriate designated areas at the city landfill. Tires accepted must be whole and must not have rims on them. Refrigerators, freezers, and air conditioners will be accepted only if the Freon has been removed by a licensed technician whose sticker is attached to those items. The following items are not accepted: junked vehicles, electronics, oil filters, batteries, petroleum products and byproducts, explosive materials, medical waste, and liquid waste and paint. The cleanup event is not for commercial customers or any other businesses. Contact Fort Stockton Public Works at 336-3092 with any questions or concerns. I wanted to make sure that we give the opportunity for our citizens. It would help our public works out, so if the citizens wanted to take their own at that time, during this time, it would help us out, and at the same time, it would give them one extra opportunity to throw within this time frame. City Approves Construction Agreement for Hodges Pavilion by Sean Yorks. The newest addition to the Fort Stockton Convention Center is on track to be finished within the next 4 to 5 months after the City Council approved a construction agreement with LT Construction to complete the Hodges Pavilion. The pavilion will be added to the east side of the Fort Stockton Convention Center. The contract was approved at a special council meeting on March 20th. City Attorney Pooja Buenpalli said the contract states the pavilion will be finished in 20 weeks and weather delays will not be counted against the contractor. The contractor requested an initial mobilization payment of $100,000, and the total cost of the project is $994,000, with an invoice submitted every 30 days. All of the work has to be reviewed and approved by the city engineer. The pavilion will include a ticket booth, two fountain benches, 6-foot decorative fence at the front entry, lighting, and a gazebo. The City Council amended the solicitation of sealed bids for the Belding Water Well No. 6 replacement water well services to reflect a well depth minimum of approximately 450 feet. One of the things that initially we identified the depth because of the recent activity that was identified by the Water District to include a lot of the other activity that's happening. The decision was made that it needs to go deeper, said Frank Rodriguez, adding the minimum is 450 feet. It's based on usage that the water out of there. Well 6 was only 340 feet deep, said Robbie Dominguez. Well, one of our deepest is 410 feet. Now, even though it's drilled at 410 feet, the pumps were only set at about 340 or so not all the way to the bottom. Since we're going to be drilling a new well and with possible things maybe happening in the future with our aquifer, we feel like it's a good idea we went down to the minimum of 450, down to at least 500 feet to give us room. That way, if we need to add pipe and rod to our pumps, we can get down deeper as the aquifer may possibly go down on us. It's for human assurances for the city to continue to pump water. The council approved the amendment. Fort Stockton Police Department applies for Border Protection Grant by Sean Yorks. The City Council approved Resolution 23, which authorizes the city to file a grant application with Governor Greg Abbott's office for a local border security program known as Border Star. Right now, we're operating off the Lone Star Grant. We want to enter the Border Star Grant, said Police Chief Ernesto Velasquez. Basically, we're gaining access coming from the border, Highway 385, 285, since Fort Stockton is a hub. We're also looking for the undocumented aliens, drug trafficking cases, hopefully to build those type of cases. The city is asking for a little more than $10,000. The Border Star program provides funding and resources to state and local agencies, coordination for targeted interagency operations, an intelligence sharing network, training and education, and new technological initiatives to enhance border security. The City Council unanimously voted to approve applying for the grant. In addition, Chief Velasquez reported that the police department received a donation of $1,250 from ALSIPS. They invited us to the grand opening. They had a band there, and they surprised and presented us with a $1,250 check. We appreciate ALSIPS doing that for y'all, said Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander. The council voted to accept the donation. The council also voted to approve a funding request for $10,000 by Frontier CASA, court-appointed special advocates for children. CASA has asked for assistance. We did budget, but we budgeted for another entity, which we haven't given any funding to, that other entity, since 2018. CASA's up and coming, and they're starting. The city has been providing funding for the Lila Smith Safe House in Fort Stockton, but had not done so since 2018. It has already been stated that they are standalone. They were doing well receiving grants. That organization, which separated from the Crisis Center of West Texas in 2019, became its own agency, First Response Ministry, on March 2, 2019, and serves adult survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence in Pecos County. So now CASA has come through and is asking for funding, and we do have that available in our budget. CASA is an all-volunteer nonprofit group who speaks up for the best interests of abused and neglected children in the court system. The council voted unanimously to approve the funding.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, March 16th. Lobos have huge gains at regional powerlifting meet. Coker headed to state. The story was written by Armando Flores. On Friday night, the Monahans Lobo powerlifting team traveled to Abilene Wiley High School for the Texas High School Powerlifting Association's Region 1 powerlifting meet. Monahan sent Lucas McNeely, Alex Gonzalez, Kason Moore, Ryan Ramirez, Jesse Rodriguez, Joseph Vowles, Cash Flores, Drew Coker, and Miguel Jorgi to the regional meet after having qualified to advance based on their meets this season. The Lobos set some personal bests and had two medalists at the region meet, with Jorgi and Coker walking away with medals. Jorgi took home the fifth-place medal in the super heavyweight division with a total of 1,190 pounds. Mickey had a squat of 515 pounds, a bench press of 250 pounds, and a deadlift of 425 pounds. Coker punched his ticket for a return trip to Abilene, this time for the state meet, with a second-place finish in the 308-pound weight class. The senior continues to add to his total each week and did just that once more on Friday. Coker squatted 645 pounds, bench-pressed 370 pounds, and deadlifted 525 pounds for a total weight of 1,540 pounds. Head coach Fred Howard said, quote, "Without question, the boys gave everything they had. I am extremely proud of the efforts and dedication the kids gave all year," end quote. This is Howard's final season coaching powerlifting. He added, quote, "The future is bright in the land of the Lobos. I'm looking forward to watching the kids progress with Coach Tanneberger in the years to come. I can't say enough about Monahan's athletes and the athletic program as a whole. What a year we are having. Not a single program in the fall missed post-district competition. This spring has continued once the fall started," end quote. The Texas High School Powerlifting Association Boys State Meet will be held on March 23rd at the Taylor County Exposition Center in Abilene. City seeks grant for outdoor fitness court. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The significance of getting outdoors and being healthy was a major topic addressed by city council members at Tuesday's meeting, in which a big decision was made that could go a long way to promoting the health and well-being of the area. Council members gave their seal of approval for the city to apply for a grant through the National Fitness Campaign and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas as part of a new partnership to assist in increasing access to fitness sites and reducing barriers to physical and mental health by collaborating to bring free outdoor fitness centers to communities across Texas. City Manager Rex Thee showed the council a short video presentation which explained the idea behind the fitness court and exactly what it is. The campaign is based around a free outdoor gym called the Fitness Court, which features seven functional training zones: core, squat, push, lunge, pull, agility, and bend, as well as thousands of bodyweight exercises and digital programming for adults of all ages and abilities. The court will also allow users to connect to a fitness app that can be scanned on-site and access all the exercises as well as join local classes. Grants are from $35,000 to $50,000, with the total cost of the fitness court ranging from $130,000 to $175,000. If the city receives the grant, the remaining balance would be paid by either private donations or any available funds in the upcoming budget, Thee said. The potential location of the fitness court is on 15th Street beside the detention pond and directly across the street from Car Wash 828. Quote, "This is what I call no man's land," he said. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation currently owns the 0.54-acre property, but has been unsuccessful in securing a buyer for the lot. quote, "The piece of property would house the fitness court easily, with room for parking, and to expand if we ever looked at doing that. Water and sewer connections are close by, therefore installing water fountains could also be done," he said. The area around the Ward County Event Center and 15th Street is already a hot spot for people who are trying to get in their daily step counts, and Thee said, quote, "With the new Event Center Park, elementary school, and kids zone, the area will continue to grow, so the fitness court will be highly visible, see lots of traffic, and be used if built there," end quote. Thee was only asking the council if they liked the idea and if they agreed to the location of the fitness court. Quote, "I'm asking today what the consensus is and if this is something the city can peruse. We are not obligated at any time until the grant is awarded and everything is finalized," he said. Councilmember Jeppy Wilson asked what the liability to the city would be regarding the fitness court. Thee explained, quote, "The fitness court would go in our parks system, and the liability would be the same as it currently is on the other city parks, street, or facility in town," end quote. Mayor Adam Steen said, quote, "This is a great idea, and anything that promotes health and wellness is great for our community. But I would recommend, if we do get the grant and do this, to do it right from the beginning and make it look nice with landscaping and all," end quote. Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett told the council how the fitness court could help with tourism and allow for more local events. Quote, "This facility could provide a place for first responder challenges, training, or the local gyms could host competitions or extra training. This could also bring in extra money to the economy and boost tourism in the area, especially once the park is finished. The possibilities are endless, really, and it is a great way to add to the quality of life for the citizens of Monahans," Burnett said. Thee said the city would move forward and begin the grant process on the fitness court. In total, BCBSTX is contributing $475,000 in grants to help fund the new fitness courts across the state. 22-year-old mother killed in rollover. Alexis Rianne Dominguez, age 22, of Monahans, was killed in a one-vehicle wreck on State Highway 349, 60 miles north of Midland, on Tuesday, March 7th, around 3:50 p.m. According to Stephen Blanco, a sergeant with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Dominguez was traveling south on State Highway 349 when the right rear tire blew out on the 2008 Chevrolet Blazer she was driving. The Chevy veered left across both lanes of traffic and went into a pasture where it rolled several times. Dominguez, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was thrown from the vehicle and pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Bradshaw. Dominguez's 2-year-old son, who was properly restrained, was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition. Weather conditions were clear and dry at the time of the crash. Trooper Astrid Resendez of Big Spring investigated the accident. Suspected drunk driver crashes into 18-wheeler Saturday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man found himself behind bars early Saturday morning after he failed to stay in his lane and crashed into an 18-wheeler near the East Interchange. Officers were called to the 2200 block of Sealy around 3 a.m. on Saturday in reference to a wreck involving a Chevy C10 and an 18-wheeler. Once on scene, officers located the accident and both vehicles were in the westbound lane on the north side of the roadway. Monahans Police Department Captain Stormy Law said, quote, "Officer Terrazas made contact with the driver of the Chevy, Homero Xaviera Terrazas, age 50, of 116 East 8th Street. Terrazas noted Xaviera Terrazas was emitting a strong alcoholic odor from his breath and person, so a standardized field sobriety test was conducted, which Xaviera Terrazas failed. Xaviera Terrazas was subsequently placed under arrest and charged with driving while intoxicated, third or more, a third-degree felony. Xaviera Terrazas was traveling eastbound on Sealy when he failed to maintain one lane of travel and veered into the westbound lane, striking the 18-wheeler. Neither driver was taken to be treated for injuries. Xaviera Terrazas was also charged with possession of a controlled substance after Officer Terrazas was conducting a search incident to arrest and located a clear baggie with a 0.1 gram of a white powder substance inside, suspected to be cocaine, Laws said. Tuesday chase ends with felony charges for AWOL driver. A traffic stop ended with a chase through two counties and the arrest of Khalil George, age 20, of Tucker, Georgia, on two felony charges and a military hold. The Ward County Sheriff's Office attempted a routine traffic stop on a black Toyota Camry for reckless driving around 8 a.m. on Tuesday on Interstate 20 near mile marker 60 on the eastbound side, but George failed to stop and the chase began. George then led deputies on a chase down Interstate 20 with speeds approaching 120 miles per hour, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Monahans police officers assisted by blocking the exits into Monahans to stop George from entering the city. According to scanner traffic, George's Camry hit spike strips set by Texas Department of Public Safety officers, but George kept going after losing a tire. The chase ended around mile marker 115 after George rolled the Camry. George was subsequently arrested and charged with evading arrest or detention with a vehicle, a third-degree felony by Texas Department of Public Safety, and is on military hold. George was a member of the U.S. Army stationed at Fort Bliss. George was listed as AWOL from the Army. Friday night fire totals RV. A fire call at 7:45 p.m. last Saturday night reported an RV on fire at 208 East E Street on the corner of E and Betty across from Shiloh Baptist Church. According to Monahans Fire Department Captain Randy Crabtree, quote, the owner was out of town when the fire started, possibly in the kitchen area. Firefighters used approximately 2,000 gallons of water to extinguish the fire and remained on site 30 to 40 minutes. Quote, the RV was considered a total loss, Crabtree added. 16 advanced to Skills USA state meet. In late February, the Monahans High School and Walker Junior High Skills USA teams competed in the Skills USA District Skills and Leadership Championships in San Angelo. The primary location of the district competition was held at the Howard College West Texas Training Center in San Angelo on February 24th and 25th. Of the 18 students, 16 will advance to the Skills USA State Skills and Leadership Conference on March 30th through April 3rd in Corpus Christi. Quote, all of our students had a tremendous amount of work that had to be done in a very short time span. They worked hard and dedicated many hours to preparing themselves for their competitions. We are proud of them and their commitment to Monahans High School and Walker Junior High, their teammates, and Skills USA. If you see any of them, please give some encouragement as they prepare for the next level of competition, Monahans High School and Walker Junior High Skills USA advisor Scott Burkett said. Advancing to the state meet are Mackenzie Burkett, Charisma Carrasco, Morgan Simonton, Alexis Deerenwater, Kiriima Garcia-Johnson, Micah Vega, Lucas McNeely, Deseo Garcia, Javin Cedillo, Ailey Martinez, Fanny Marquez, Avery Cullum, Braylon Cartwright, Natalie Hernandez, Riley Spangler, and April Chavez. The students competed in a variety of competitions that ranged from specific skilled areas from their occupational classes two professional leadership competitions that cover competencies from all occupations. Burn ban in place for unincorporated areas of county. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners met in regular session at 9:30 a.m. Monday in the Ward County Courthouse Commissioners' Courtroom. A quorum was determined. Pledges to the American and Texas flag were said. Ward County Judge Holly gave the invocation. The previous meeting minutes were approved, and the court moved on to the agenda items. One item which concerns all the county citizens is the reinstatement of a burn ban for residents living outside the city limits of the city of Monahans proper. The burn ban does not prohibit the burning of household trash in containers covered by metal grating, outdoor cooking, or burning in metal pits and grills, including the burning of wood for such purpose, or other outdoor burning activities as permitted by the Ward County Fire Marshal in his sole discretion. Quote, "We are back to no rain and very dry conditions, as well as high winds in the county. These are high burn conditions, and we need our county residents to be safe," Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. In accordance with local government code, a violation of this order is a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by a fine not to exceed $500. The commissioners also approved the change order for the event center part. The original contract with Aldridge Gardens out of Midland was for mesh rebar to be used in all the concrete flatwork, which was less cost. The new contract plans are requesting 6-inch by 6-inch, 6-gauge steel mesh be used in place of the fiber mesh. The additional cost of the steel mesh will be $38,400. Another contract change is adding 5 additional 2-inch water taps. The contract with Scott Thane Ditching Service Limited from Odessa states county crews will dig the ditches and excavate under the curbs from the main water line to the meter box to ready the area for the placement of the taps. The cost was approved for $21,250. The other Event Center Park change order was in the electrical area in the form of more electrical plugs. Quote, "After talking to Monahans Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett about her Christmas decoration plans, I knew we would need additional electrical outlets," Holly said. 15 additional outlets on poles and 4 in the seating area will be installed by K-Bar Electric Incorporated out of Boyd for the contract price of $29,000. Improvements at the Ward County Golf Course were also on the agenda. Quote, "Last summer, the court voted to give the golf course $100,000 to help cover renovations to course restrooms. Since then, the plans have changed, and the Golf Association president, Bobby Gibson, asked to address the commissioners to report the updated plans," Holly said. Quote, "After considerations, we decided to take the money we were going to spend on ready-made structures for restroom and, instead, close in the pavilion and put restrooms there. The pavilion will be extended to become 20 feet by 60 feet. It will have heating and cooling, giving players like the high school golfers a place to get in out of the weather because the pro shop is not big enough to shelter a crowd. Upgrade work on the course restrooms on hole numbers 8 and 15 has already begun. We accepted a low bid of $137,000, so we wanted to let the court know that our change of plans for the $100,000 they gave us and that we are going to cover the remaining $37,000. The project should be finished by summer," Gibson said. The renovated restrooms on hole number 8 and hole 15 will also serve as a shelter if a storm with lightning comes up, giving a closer, faster way to get to shelter," Holly said. The commissioners also acknowledged a $2,500 donation to the Ward County Sheriff's Office from Occidental Petroleum, with no specifications, use as needed. also approved was the acceptance of a state border grant for the district attorney's office, which is a grant to be used to help pay employees' salaries of those who work with or on border-related issues. In another agenda item, the commissioners approved the appointment of Boyd Barron to the Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers to fill retired manager Larry Hunt's position.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.